Glory to Jesus Christ! Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish presents Light of the East, a program revealing how the Eastern Catholic Churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Churches and today's world in profound ways through their histories, traditions, mysteries, and spirituality. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya, pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois, and this is a story of the Eastern Churches, an inspiring story of faith, courage, intrigue, mystery, spirituality, dissension, and reconciliation. But most of all, this is an expression of a great experience of faith through our unique divine liturgy. Join with me now as we look toward the Light of the East.
Light of the East is also underwritten by a grant from the charitable Koch Foundation, whose vision is to strengthen and propagate the Catholic faith by providing grant support for a wide variety of evangelization efforts. Learn more at KochFoundation.org. Koch spelled K-O-C-H. And Light of the East is also supported by Eastern Christian Publications, where you can find the prayers of the Catholic Byzantine Daily Office at ecpubs.com and easternchristianmedia.com. A broadband network. For you to learn more about the Eastern Catholic Churches, that's easternchristianpublications.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Welcome to Light of the East. I am Father Thomas Loya, your host. Well, this new liturgical year in the Byzantine tradition is starting off with a lot of wonderful energy. We had last Sunday, we had the beginning of the new liturgical year, September 1st, and now we have the Feast of the Nativity of the Mother of God. It's interesting that in the Byzantine liturgical calendar, the liturgical year begins with the feast day of the Virgin Mary, feast day of the Mother of God, her birth. You know, she comes on the scene, so the rest of the story can unfold. And the last major feast of our liturgical year is her dormition. In other words, her passing gently into heaven, body and soul intact, which in the West they call the Assumption. So she's sort of like bookend celebrations, her birth and also her passing. And in between, it's so much about Jesus Christ, as well as his mother too. But this year, on this Feast of the Nativity of the Mother of God, we also begin now our observance, which happens in the whole church, East and West. It's one of these great East and West convergence points. We begin the focus on the celebration of the Exaltation of the Cross. In other words, this is the Sunday before the Exaltation of the Cross. These great feast days always have, remember, the bell curve I've talked about many times in life, especially in the liturgical life of the church and in our prayer and the liturgy, the Mass. It has a bell curve shape. In other words, there's a preparation period, a rising action, the climactic moment of the actual feast itself, and then the post-festive, or sometimes, as in the Latin rite, it's called an octave. There is an octave for the Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross in the Byzantine tradition. But we begin preparing for that, in other words, the rising action, the rising side of that bell curve today. We don't mean to overshadow the Nativity of the Virgin Mary, but since the Exaltation of the Cross will actually take place on the last day of this week, we thought we would treat that as well. I'm going to read to you from a book, actually it's a series, that I highly recommend to families and, of course, to churches. It's called The Prologue from Ohrid, also called the Synaxarion. It comes in a 2-volume set or a 4-volume set. Mine is a 4-volume set, and it is a book that has the information about every day in the church, in the liturgical life of the church. In other words, the feast days, the saints. In addition to the history of it, it has some beautiful, wonderful meditations. I highly recommend this, especially for families. You know, sit around together and read each day from the Synaxarion. The Synaxarion says today about the Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross that on this day are commemorated two events connected with the precious cross of Christ. The first, the finding of the cross on Golgotha, and the second, the returning of the cross to Jerusalem from Persia. Staying in the Holy Land, the Holy Byzantine Empress Helena decided to look for the precious cross of the Lord. An old Jewish man called Judah was the only person who knew the whereabouts of the cross, and, under pressure from the empress, he revealed that the cross was bearing under the temple of Venus that the emperor Hadrian had built on Golgotha. The empress ordered that this idolatrous temple be pulled down, and then, digging deep below it, she found three crosses. While the empress was uncertain about how to recognize which cross was the Lord's, a funeral procession passed by. Patriarch Macarius, at that time, told them to place the crosses one by one on the dead man. When they placed the first and second on him, the dead man remained unchanged. But when they placed the third on him, he was restored to life. By this, they knew that this was the precious and life-giving cross of Christ. After that, they placed it on a sick woman, and she recovered. Then the patriarch raised the cross aloft for all to see, and the people sang with tears, "Lord, have mercy." The Empress Helena had a silver casing made and placed the precious cross in it. Now later, King Chosroes conquered Jerusalem, took the people into slavery, and carried the Lord's cross off to Persia, where it remained for 14 years. In 628, the Greek emperor Heraclius was victorious over Chosroes and brought the cross back to Jerusalem with great ceremony. Now entering the city, Heraclius was carrying the cross on his back, but suddenly the aged emperor was unable to take another step. Patriarch Zacharias saw an angel directing the emperor to take off his imperial robes and walk beneath the cross along the way that Christ had walked, barefoot and humiliated as Christ had been. He passed this vision on to the emperor, who stripped himself of his raiment and, in poor clothing and barefoot, took up the cross, carried it to Golgotha, and placed it in the Church of the Resurrection to the joy and consolation of the whole Christian world. That's a little bit of the history from the Prologue of Ohrid, also known as the Synaxarion. But in the Byzantine Church, this feast day of the Exaltation of the Cross is done with a lot of solemnity, a lot of celebration. One of the things we do is we imitate liturgically what you just heard me read from the time when the real cross was first discovered and the patriarch held it up in front of the people and they all bowed down before it, striking their breasts, saying, "Lord, have mercy, Lord, have mercy." What we do in our church is we have the cross on the altar, richly decorated with flowers. The priest then takes it in procession out of the sanctuary, past the icon screen that divides the sanctuary from the nave, and he places it on a tetrapod, which is a table in the middle of the church. There, he pronounces a litany. He leads the people in a litany, and as the people say, "Lord, have mercy," they say it over and over again, just like those people who first saw the cross when it was found. But the priest holds that cross in his hands, he raises it up, and he bends down very, very slowly, and then comes back up very, very slowly as the people sing the "Lord, have mercy." Now, this "Lord, have mercy" can be a number of times, even up to 100 times, and the priest will do this four times. He'll do it around the four sides of this table that's in the middle of the church. And what this is doing, it's symbolizing liturgically, showing the true cross to the whole world. In other words, the four corners of the world. And so we have the entire world bending down and begging forgiveness, saying, "Lord, have mercy, Lord, have mercy," in the presence of the true cross. That is part of the observance, the ceremony that we use in the Byzantine Church for this great feast day. And the priests, they wear red or deep colors, you know, the colors of crucifixion, of mourning, of penance on that feast day. But it's a glorious feast day. It's a feast day, really, of triumph. See, whenever we celebrate the cross in the church, we do, of course, on Good Friday, celebrate and observe the great, deep tragedy of the cross, you know, the pain and the suffering, but the redemptive pain and suffering. But on two Sundays, on 2 days during the liturgical calendar in the Byzantine tradition, we celebrate the cross in a victorious way. One of those is, of course, this week, the Exaltation of the Cross, and the other one is during the third Sunday of Lent. And both of them are very triumphant celebrations of the feast. We observe, of course, what happened on the cross, but we really look at its redemptive value, how it is glorious. You know, sometimes we wonder, you might wonder, think about this for a moment. We usually don't think about this because we are so used to wearing crosses and celebrating them and bowing before them, and they're made of gold and silver and precious metals, diamonds, and so on. Beautiful wood. But the cross was the symbol of everything bad you sometimes wonder, are we sick or something that we celebrate and adore something that was the sum total of everything bad? No, it's because that which was the worst thing becomes the best thing. And only through Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ mounted that cross. We're going to talk more about that a little bit later. But in the liturgical text for this feast day, we also do a lot of what we call allegorical typology. In other words, the prayers, the text, liturgical text for this week in the Byzantine Church, harken back to all kinds of Old Testament passages that prefigure or hint at the cross. For example, in Exodus 16, Moses is asked by the people to find water because they're thirsty in the desert. And it was hot and they were thirsty. And he comes upon a place of water and the water was poisonous. So God tells him, take a piece of wood, and put it into the water. And the water was purified. This is a prefigurement of the purifying power of the cross. That it takes what is corrupt, like stagnant, corrupted, polluted water, and it turns it into what is pure and holy, life-giving. That's what the cross does for us spiritually. And it was prefigured that way in a physical way in the Old Testament. Also, in Exodus 17, and this is what the liturgical texts say, they refer to that passage. When the rock was struck and gushed forth water for a calloused and disobedient people, it manifested the mystery of the church chosen by God, for the cross is her steadfastness and power, her might. Remember that passage in Exodus 17 when Moses struck the rock with his staff and from a rock came life-giving water. Once again, an allegory of Christ. The rock, the keystone of the structure, and from that rock came life-giving water, life-giving truth, the streams of living water spiritually. Another passage from Numbers chapter 21, verses 4 to 8. When we return, we'll look at this passage from Numbers. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Every day, Father Loya posts a brief 2-minute Facebook video on the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish homepage. You'll be amazed at what you can learn just by watching. Light of the East mission is Christianity's reunion and to tell the story of the Eastern Lung of the Catholic Church. We need your support. In order to keep Light of the East on the air, you can make a donation now by going to ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com. And then donate securely using any major credit card. With your help, we can keep Light of the East's illumination bright.
This is Bishop Robert Pipta of the Byzantine Catholic Eparchy of Parma asking you to join me at our New Horizons Luncheon on Saturday, September 28th at 11 a.m. at the Tinley Park Convention Center in Tinley Park, Illinois. This luncheon is an opportunity to glorify and thank God and to support the Eparchy while enjoying dinner, drinks, music, and my sharing of a vision for our Midwest region. For registration and sponsorship information, visit parma.org and look under the Support Us tab. I'm Bishop Robert Pipta of the Byzantine Catholic Eparchy of Parma, and you are listening to our very own Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
You are listening to the Choirs of Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church under the direction of Timothy Woods in Homer Glen, Illinois. This is the music you hear on Light of the East and is sung during the sacred liturgy at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish. Order online at ByzantineCatholic.com. All we ask is a donation of $20 or more, which includes shipping and handling, to Annunciation Parish for each Theosis CD. Send a check made out to Annunciation Parish at 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. And may God grant you.
We Welcome back to Light of the East. I'm Father Thomas Loyal, your host. As we're moving into this new liturgical year, the Byzantine Church, and we're doing it with a lot of gusto, a lot of celebration, a lot of solemnity. Today, as I mentioned, is the Feast of the Nativity of the Mother of God. It is also the preparation for the oncoming Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross. And that's what we are focusing on today. I left off before the break with a passage from Numbers chapter 21. And this is the story, the famous one, about how the Jews were being bitten by serpents, by snakes in the desert. They had all kinds of trouble in the desert. So our Lord told Moses, make out of bronze a serpent. In other words, make that same image mounted on your staff. And as people looked at it, they were healed from the snake bites. And we say this in our liturgical text in that regard. After raising up a staff as a cure against the deadly and poisonous bite of the serpents, Moses placed upon it crosswise, as a symbol of the cross, a serpent. In this manner that he triumphed over calamity. Therefore, let us praise Christ our God, for he has been glorified. There are other passages in the Old Testament as well that prefigure the mystery of the cross. It uses wood, it uses water. These images are all hints at what will be fulfilled in Jesus Christ on the cross. But there's something else I want to refer you to, and that is this passage from our liturgical text. It comes from the Matin service for this Feast of the Cross, and it says this, oh, what a strange mystery! The length and breadth of the cross is equal to the heavens, for it sanctifies the whole world by divine grace. By the cross, savage nations are vanquished. By the cross, the authority of kings is confirmed. O divine ladder, we go up to heaven by you, and with our hymns exalt Christ the Lord. I point this liturgical text out. It's an ancient one, of course, as are all of our liturgical texts in the Byzantine Church, but it refers to the length and breadth of the cross. In other words, it's vertical and horizontal bars, that it sanctifies the whole world by divine grace. The reason why I point it out is because I always found it fascinating that a great prophet of our modern time, G.K. Chesterton, had a wonderful reference in his book, Orthodoxy, about the cross, which, whether he took it from the liturgical text or not, it is very, very congruent with that. He's speaking about the cross, and I'll read from his book, Orthodoxy, which everyone should read. In fact, Dale Alquist, who was the head of the Chesterton Society, once said, the only thing worse about not reading Chesterton's book, Orthodoxy, is not having read it three times over. You know, I read it and I agree with him. I read it many times over. It's a constant source of study. But this is what Chesterton says about the cross, and he's comparing it to other symbols. He says, as we have taken the circle as a symbol of reason and madness, we very well may take the cross as a symbol at once of mystery and of health. Buddhism is centripetal, but Christianity is centrifugal. It breaks out. For the circle is perfect and infinite in its nature, but it is fixed forever in its size. It can never be larger or smaller. But the cross, though it has at its heart a collision and a contradiction, can extend its four arms forever without altering its shape, because it has a paradox in its center. It can grow without changing. The circle returns upon itself and is bound. The cross opens its arms to the four winds. It is a signpost for free travelers. Symbols alone are of cloudy value in speaking of this deep matter. And another symbol from physical nature will express sufficiently well the real place of mysticism before mankind. The one created thing that we cannot look at is the one thing in the light of which we look at everything. Like the sun, at noonday, mysticism explains everything else by the blaze of its own victorious invisibility. Detached intellectualism is, in the exact sense of a popular phrase, all moonshine, for it is light without heat. It is secondary light, reflected from a dead world. But the Greeks were right when they made Apollo the god both of imagination and of sanity, for he was both the patron of poetry and the patron of healing. Of necessary dogmas and a special creed, I shall speak later, but that transcendentalism by which all men live primarily has much the position of the sun in the sky. We are conscious of it as a kind of splendid confusion. It is something both shining and shapeless. at once a blaze and a blur, but the circle of the moon is as clear and unmistakable, as recurrent and as inevitable as a circle of Euclid on a blackboard. For the moon is utterly reasonable, and the moon is the mother of lunatics and has given to them all her name. Chesterton was a master at what we call paradox or contradiction, and certainly the greatest symbol of paradox is the cross, as he just pointed out here. You have a horizontal bar and a vertical bar, and they converge in the middle. And in the middle, where do we find Christ? And how do we find him? That middle intersection, if you notice on crucifixes, especially ones that have the body of Christ on them, that middle intersection contains his heart and his head, the place of love, of the will, the choice to love. That conversion point represents this great paradox that Chesterton talks about. The cross is a paradox because it is at once the most horrible thing. At the same time, it is the greatest thing. The horizontal bar represents death or sleep or a lateral move. In other words, as like we sometimes live life, we kind of look laterally to the left and the right, mired in just that short vision. Yet it has a vertical bar that looks up, that takes our gaze upward, outward from that horizontal, lateral, sort of being stuck kind of view. It takes our eye, the vertical bar, takes our gaze upward towards where there is hope, where there is our destiny, where there is God. And so of all the symbols, of all the things that Christ could have used, it was the worst, ugliest, most horrible thing because it was an instrument of slow torture and slow death. It was an instrument of shame. And yet Christ chose that one. And how ingenious was that choice? Because that cross represented this mystery of paradox, of contradiction. Horizontal, in other words, our reality on our own sort of day-to-day plane. And yet that is contradicted by the vertical bar that takes us beyond the horizontal, more limited plane of our existence. And yet the four sides of that cross, the vertical and the horizontal ends, as Chesterton said, and as our liturgical texts said that I read, move out. Just as geometry teaches us, lines do not end. And so the lines, rather than a circle, Christ chose lines. The lines that are horizontal, the lines that are vertical in the cross, go on forever. In other words, Christ's reach, his arms outspread, have no end to them. He reaches out for all time, to all people, to bring their gaze to him, to the very center of him, his heart, his mind, and then to look upward towards heaven, which has no end. So you see, the cross, as we look at it in the mystical format, as Chesterton says, we have to look at things mystically. This is why I appreciate Chesterton so much, because he's very much of the mind of our Byzantine spirituality, which is all about mystery, all about paradox. We take a cross and we bow before it. We raise it up, even though it was a symbol of everything that is bad, things that we wanted to avoid, suffering and death and ugliness and shame and mockery. And yet we bow before that and raise it up. And it is our boast to the world because it has the answer to the world. Life is lived in the both and, not in the either or. And the cross is exactly that, both and, horizontal, you know, this plane of existence on this earth, but also vertical at the same time, not separate. It's not a vertical bar separated from the horizontal bar. It's two bars, horizontal and vertical, coming together, which means they subsist in each other. That our gaze is very horizontal on this earth, but it must also necessarily be vertical, taking us to hope and to heaven. And this is a lesson for the world, which does not look up. It does not gaze enough heavenward and up and out of the doldrums, the workaday world that we live in, what we call reality. Yeah, that's a part of reality, but the real reality is in the vertical bar, pointing us upward. And life is lived best in the both and, at the convergence point of two complementary things. What we do in our culture and why we're so sick, so anxious and full of anxiety and neurosis, at war and divided, is because we live in a bipolar way. It's always this versus that instead of this and that together. So we raise the cross not only because it is the instrument of our salvation, but it gives us the meaning of life on earth so we can have a more peaceful, healthier life spiritually, mentally, physically. It's all in the cross, which we raise up and exalt, especially coming this end of the week on the very feast of the exaltation of the cross. Thanks for listening. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
To hear Light of the East again, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the Features and Programs tab. And on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Light of the East. We encourage you to tell a friend about Light of the East and to visit ByzantineCatholic.com. Light of the East is produced by ADC Media.
WTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will return to the Light of the East. To learn more about Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish, visit our website, ByzantineCatholic.com, where you will also find an archive of all of our programs. In order to continue Light of the East with its mission of Christianity's reunion, we need your support with a donation. Any amount will be a blessing. Please make out a check to Light of the East Radio and send it to Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. That's Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, spelled Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Or donate online on the homepage of ByzantineCatholic.com. From the Light of the East, a new dawn of unity is in sight. God bless you, go with God, and may God grant you many happy years.